Well, as you know, last week I started doing a series on living for God. And living for God is something all of us desire. At one point or the other in our lives, we've all desired to live for God. Maybe at the beginning of the year, whilst we are making our resolutions, we say, oh, this year I'm going to live for God. Or something miraculous happens in your life, and you say, oh, I want to live for God. Or you need something desperately from God, and you say, I want to live for God. But at some point in our lives, each one of us makes a wish or a request or a desire to live for God. However, as our experience shows, it's easier to say, I want to live for God, than to actually live for God. And living for God does not mean that we seclude ourselves and go and hide somewhere in the mountains. It doesn't also mean just the period we use for consecration, for prayer and fasting. It's a daily life that we live for God. And last week, we considered that living for God begins from the treasures of our heart. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If God is our treasure, our heart will be towards God. If ourselves, our pleasure is our treasure, then our heart will pursue our own pleasures. Today, we are taking it a little further from where I left off last week. And so my subtitle for Living for God is A Living Sacrifice. A Living Sacrifice. And before I go to our main text for today, I would make a statement about what is required to live for God. And I'm going to focus on three things that are required for us to live for God. And then we'll go into the text and we talk about a living sacrifice. First and foremost, if we're going to live for God, we have to surrender our lives to Him. Living for God requires surrender. Surrender basically is giving in to God's will. So when we say a person has surrendered, it means that they have volunteered or given in to God's will. The number one battle we have in our relationship with God is a battle of wills. The battle between our will and the will of God. And many times our will wins over the will of God, because our will is what we possess. And the challenge for each one of us is, who wins the battle of wills? The battle between your will and the will of God. Jesus Christ faced the battle of wills. In his temptation in the wilderness, he faced the battle of wills, whether he's going to submit his will to God or submit his will to himself. He's going to turn stones to bread, or he's going to claim the glories of this world, or he's going to prove by a miraculous way that he is the Son of God. And he won the battle of wills in the wilderness. But the devil came back to him in the Garden of Gethsemane for another battle of wills. And Jesus had to pray and eventually say, Father, not my will, but your will to be done. That's a surrender of wills. God is not going to take over your will. He's created us to own our will. We are free moral agents. For us to do his will, we must surrender our will to his will. So living for God requires first surrender, giving in to God's will. Secondly, living for God requires sacrifice. And sacrifice is giving up our pleasures. And the concept of sacrifice runs throughout the whole Bible. It begins right in the early chapters of the Bible, from the sacrifice of an animal whose skin is used to clothe the naked Adam and Eve, to the sacrifice of Abel, the righteous sacrifice of Abel, to the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross. The Bible is rooted in sacrifice. Sacrifice is giving up something in order to gain something. So if I say I want to live for God, I want to gain God, I have to give up something. You don't just keep your life as it is and get God on top of it. You have to give up in order to receive. That is sacrifice. Living for God requires sacrifice. And the third thing, living for God requires service. Seven is giving off ourselves to God. To live for God, we must be ready to give of our love, of our time, of our talent, of our resources to God. Jesus' family taught that to us at the Last Supper. He served by washing the feet of his disciples and commanded that that should be the way we live our lives. Jesus showed that those who are high must serve those who are low. The natural thing is for those who are low to serve those who are high. But Jesus says, in addition to that, those who are high must also serve those who are low. It's mutual. And not only that, those who are low must also serve those who are low, and those who are high must serve those who are high, and those who are low. Christian life is all about service, mutual service one to another. And if we're going to live for God, we must have a servant's attitude. We must have something in us that says, I want to serve. I want to give of what I have for God and for other people. We must sacrifice. I want to give up my own pleasure. And we must determine to surrender. I want to give in to the will of God. And if you're really desiring to live for God, these three words are going to play important roles in your life, in my life, as we seek to do God's will. And it is mirrored in the main text that I'm going to read from Romans chapter 12 and verse number 1. Romans chapter 12 and verse number 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. That's Romans chapter 12, verse 1. And just for you to know, next week I'm going to do verse 2. So verse 1, Paul writing to the Christians at the time and to us too by the inspiration of God says, I beseech you, therefore. Now, normally when a person uses the word therefore in a sentence, it means that he has been saying something previously, and on the basis of what he has said previously, he is now making a conclusion for now. So therefore always builds on what has been said in the past, which is now relevant. So when Paul says, I beseech you, therefore, what is the basis of the therefore? What is he talking about? Now, if you know the book of Romans well, and I suppose you've read the book of Romans, if you haven't, at least you've read one verse in Romans, but hopefully you've read the whole book of Romans. If you've studied the book of Romans from chapter 1 to chapter 11, the Apostle Paul is making a very solid theological argument for Jesus Christ and for salvation, and what salvation is, and what grace is, and what faith is, and how salvation comes, and what Jesus did for us, and all of that. So he makes all of that argument from Romans chapter 1 to chapter 11. And then he gets to chapter 12, and he says, based on all that I've said from chapter 1 to chapter 11, therefore, this is the conclusion. In chapter 1 to 11, he's talking about what Christ gave to us. And then now in chapter 12, he says, this is what you do in response to what Christ did for you. That's why the therefore is in that passage. I beseech you, therefore, by the mercies of God. Basically, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, means I'm begging you. I beg you. I beg you, based on what we know about Christ, I beg you. What is he begging us to do? He says in 1 to 11, Christ has given himself to you. Now he says, because of that, I beg you, you also give yourself to Christ. So he says, I beseech you, therefore, by the message of God, that you present your bodies to God. present your bodies to God. To live for God, we must present our bodies to God. The word present means to offer. We present our bodies to God by offering our bodies to God. And the action comes from us. It doesn't come from God. He didn't say God will take your body from you. He says you must do. In other words, you must take yourself and make yourself as a present to God. To present means to offer something, to sacrifice something. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies to God. Now, isn't it interesting? He didn't say in this passage that you present your spirit to God. He didn't even say present your monies to God, although it's good to present your money to God. But that's not what he's talking about. In this context, he's saying present your bodies to God. That's quite peculiar, because you think he would say present your spirit to God, but he says present your bodies to God. What does that mean? Well, your body is your flesh. Flesh. And so when he says your body, he's not talking about the physical body you have now that composes your natural being. He's talking about your fleshly desires. Your fleshly desires, your fleshly appetites. The flesh. Helue, helue. Ohunam, ohunam. Flesh. He says, this is what you're going to present to God. See, he's not saying go and fight some fire and throw yourself on it. He's saying you have some fleshly desires. Christ has redeemed you. Christ has died for you. Christ has saved you. But this body needs work to be done on it. And for the work to be done on it, it's not just based on what Christ did for you. It's also based on what you do to this flesh. Based on what Christ has done for you. If you really believe you are born again and you are born of Christ, then you must present your bodies to God. And God is not going to do it for you. You must do it yourself. You're going to present your bodies to God, your fleshly desires, your appetites, desire for food, sex, pleasure, fun, excitement, the kind of things that makes you look at life and say, life is so sweet. Oh, life is good. My God, life is good. That thing that makes you say life is good, that's your flesh. That's your flesh. That's when you go somewhere and you eat good food and you say, oh, this is a good life. That's the flesh. And he says, you're going to present this fleshly desire to God. I know some of you say, Pastor, you're getting too close. You're getting too close. Yeah, Bible gets close. Now, he says that this must be presented. Why? Because these desires of the flesh must be burnt on God's altar. Now, what is the basis of what Paul is saying? Paul is saying this on the basis of what he knew as a Jew in the Old Testament. When people went to the altar, they will go with an animal. Could be a bull, could be a goat, could be a lamb, sometimes a turtle dove, a pigeon. And the animal will be taken to the altar and put on the altar with fire. The altar will burn the animal. When it burns the animal, it burns the flesh. So Paul is saying, now that you are Christians, you don't go to church with a goat and with a lamb and with a bird, and you don't go with animals. You go with yourself. And what is going to be put on the altar is not an animal that must be burnt, but your fleshly desires that must be burnt. Is that going to be pleasant? No. But must it happen? Yes. The flesh must be burnt, fleshly desires. And then he says, you're going to do it as a living sacrifice. Why did he say that? Because under the Old Testament, the sacrifice, the animals that were put on the altar and burnt, they were not alive when they were burnt. You don't take a living goat and put it on the altar fire. You don't take a living bird and put it on the altar fire. You kill it first and then you burn it. So whilst you're burning it, it feels nothing. It feels nothing. So it's burning, but it is dead before it is burned. But in our case, we don't die before we present our bodies. We are alive, so it's a living sacrifice. So when you hit the fire, you feel like jumping. So that's why many times when a person says, I want to live for God, and God starts dealing with them, they get to a point, they say, this is too hard. This Christianity is too hard. It's too hard because you feel like the fire is burning you too much. Sometimes we make a desire to God, oh, I want to live for Jesus all my life. And God begins to work on us, and the flesh is being burned, and our appetites are being managed by God. We say, I think this Christianity is getting too serious. Because we are living sacrifices, we feel the heat when God is working on our flesh. We present our flesh for God to take away the fat, take away the wrong desires, take away the wrong attitudes, the wrong practices, so that we can truly live our lives for God. Our bodies presented to God. And it's living. Living bodies. But not only are we supposed to present our bodies to God for the flesh to be burnt or the fleshly desire to go. He says we must do it daily. A living sacrifice means it's alive, it's done daily, it's ongoing. In other words, you don't go and present your body to Christ or to God on his altar and say, God, I surrender all to Jesus. Then you just feel so good. Oh, today I went to church and I just surrendered all to Jesus. I just surrendered all. Until your girlfriend shows up. Or the boyfriend shows up. And the boy calls and says, hey, babes, oh, babe, oh, bae these days. Whatever they call you, you know, oh, bae, what's up? The weather is cold today. What do you think? Then all of a sudden, I surrender. The body that is on the altar, boom, jumps from the altar. No, he says, it must be a living and a daily sacrifice. We present our bodies on a daily basis. Otherwise, we're going to be like somebody who decides to go on a weight loss program. You know, there are people who do that. They say, I'm going to lose weight. And then maybe they discover some dieting, paleo diet or keto diet or some other diet. And they are eating grass and eating all kinds of things, you know. You know, and then they are very dedicated to it. And everybody sees them and says, oh, wow. Your weight loss thing is working. You're eating the grass and you're eating, and you brag about, now I don't eat this and I don't eat that and I don't eat that, and I don't eat that, until you go for the Christmas party. And then, then all of a sudden you say, what kind of punishment am I punishing myself? And as Jesus said, the latter end of that person will be worse than the first. Then you start eating the food, you make up good measure, press down, shaking together, running over. Then all of a sudden, you are back to square one, to your old self, maybe even bigger than before. That's why our body's sacrifice is daily. It's not occasional. It's not ceremonial. It's not something you do when you just hear a message and it speaks to you. But it's a daily commitment to God. So every day, your body is on the altar. And the next day, my body is on the altar. Every time you pray in the morning, you say, Lord, I surrender to you today. And the next day, I surrender to you. And the next day, I surrender to you. Each day, you are making a conscious effort to surrender to the Lord Jesus Christ. And when you surrender to him, he's going to work on you. He's going to work on your patience. He's going to work on your anger. People are going to annoy you. Have you noticed when you ask God, give me patience? That then everybody goes crazy around you. Everybody gets on your nerves. Because you think if you ask God, God, give me patience. You know, patience as a spirit will come. Now you have patience. No, that's not how it happens. God is going to then burn your anger away. And the only way to burn anger away is to let people annoy you. And as they annoy you, you become conscious that at this point, this is a test that God is working on me for me to overcome my instinct to respond this way or that way. And as you do it daily and daily and daily and daily and daily, you are mastering over your flesh and the desires of your flesh. It's a daily walk with God. I beg you, based on what Christ has done for you, that you also do something about this. Our salvation is not all about what Christ did, but there is an aspect about what we do. We present our bodies to God. Then he says, your bodies to God as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God. That means we present our bodies in holiness. We do not present our bodies in sin to God. When we present our bodies to God, we must desire holiness. We must desire holiness. Fortunately, many of us want to live the Christian life minus holiness. Holiness is not a state of being. Holiness is a pursuit. It's something we work towards, we pursue, we work at it. I want to be holy. I want to be holy, because you will never get to any state of holiness where you can boldly say, I'm holy now. No, we don't get to a place where you say, I am holy now, but you pursue holiness. You pursue it. You desire it. We are changed from glory to glory, from grace to grace, from one level to the other. God perfects us as we dedicate ourselves to him. So he says that our bodies must be presented in holiness. In holiness, not in sin. Unfortunately, these days, you know, everybody says, well, it's my own life. I do whatever I want to do with my life. I own my own life. You know, when people say they own their own life, isn't that funny? Because pretty soon, all of us will discover we don't own our own lives. We don't own our lives. So you cannot say it's my own life. It's a life God has given to you. It's a life God has allowed you to have. And he says, present your bodies in holiness. Listen to me, church. It's great to come to church and to have fellowship and be part of the praise and worship and dance and rejoice and have friends in church and all of that. Listen to Pastor Otabu preaching. But that's great, and we must do all of that. But the end of it is that we must be like Christ. And in what way are we like Christ? Are we going to wear his robes? No, we are like Christ because our character mimics his character. That's what holiness is. Holiness is Christ-likeness. We love like him. We treat people like him. We deal with life like him. Then we are holy. So he says, present your bodies holy. Present your bodies holy. Don't pollute your body. Don't pollute your body with alcohol. I know you say, yeah, but the Bible doesn't say we shouldn't drink. The Bible says you shouldn't get drunk. Yeah. You yourself making the argument. You know the truth. You know when you get very defensive, you know you are just trying to talk yourself out of conviction. The Bible didn't say we shouldn't drink. It didn't just say drink a little, but don't get drunk. Do you have a pipette to do your titration between drink and don't get drunk? In between drink and don't get drunk, there is a fluid moment. And since alcohol is fluid, you can't tell when you've crossed to drunk. So although the Bible does not say don't drink, commonsensically, you know that if I start this process, I don't even know when to stop. Because you can't be drunk and say, I'm holy for Jesus. You can't do that. You cannot be a glutton. You are eating the food. You don't know when to stop. I'm doing it for Jesus. It's not for Jesus. For yourself. You cannot be having sex with somebody you are not married to and just say, yeah, it doesn't matter. God knows my heart. He knows your body too. He knows your heart. He knows your body. And he says, present your body holy as a living sacrifice. If the person is somebody you intend to marry, marry them and stop sleeping with them. If they are not people you want to marry, you are experimenting, stop the experiment. You are already married, you need a slap to get out of this one. It has to be holy. The body has to be holy. Everybody say holiness. Holiness. All right. And it says that when we present our bodies holy in holiness to God, we must do it in a way that pleases God. Do it in a way that pleases God. That means the reason why we want to live holy is not just to score marks. We're not seeking to live holy so that everybody will say, oh, that's a holy man of God. But we want to please God. Because God's marking scheme and our marking schemes are not the same. You know, we can look at people and call them holy. For example, if you see a sister wearing maxi skirt, their clothes are from head to toe to the ankle. Big cotton, khaki to the, and the neck is up to the throat. The sleeve is up, then the whole body is covered. So that's a holy sister. That's our marking scheme. Oh, that's holy. Oh, she dresses modestly. Oh, look at her. No finger, no red, no pink, October pink nails, nothing. I mean, this is holy. She's just living for Jesus. That's our marking scheme. But God looks at that same person and says, "Ooh, within the maxi skirt is stuff. In the mind, in the heart, it's so impure. But outwardly, she may seem to be holy. But inwardly polluted." So he says, our holiness must be in a way that pleases God. We're not doing it to score marks with people. We are doing it to get God's approval. In a way that pleases God. So don't be a hypocrite and don't try to just put on a show about outward holiness. Because God is the one marking us.